whether you're Section 8 or your private pay, there's great Section 8 people. There's great private pay people. Section 8 is just a way that they receive their income. And so we really have the philosophy of we need to definitely screen that resident just as hard as we screen other people.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Spencer Sutton, and I've got Matthew Whitaker with me today. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really pumped to be here and really excited about our guest. Why don't you introduce her, Spence?
All right. So today we have with us our Birmingham team leader, Holly Atchley. So Holly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. I appreciate you having me.
It's always a special place in my heart when the Birmingham team leader does something because, as you know, it was a position I ran for quite some time. So now Holly's crushing it, doing a much better job, might I add, than I was doing ever.
Things improved. Yeah. As soon as you stepped out of the role, things just like shot through the roof. Is incredible.
Holly's one of the nicest people you'll ever know. So it definitely got nicer.
That's right. Which is rare in this industry.
There used to be a big joke around me not liking people, but we'll save that for another day. But Holly is an incredible person. She does a great job leading the team here in Birmingham and works very hard to do that. So she is a Section 8 process expert. And in Birmingham, you kind of have to be, right? I mean, we have a number of homes, especially kind of in our low to moderate income neighborhoods that we rent through the Section 8 program. So Holly, just 20,000 foot view, kind of give us your thoughts on Section 8.
So we do deal with a lot of Section 8 in Birmingham. So what Section 8 is, for anyone that does not know, this is going to be a government funded program that provides vouchers for rent for low income individuals or families. Section 8 is basically going to provide vouchers to the landlord to cover that individual's rent. This can either cover a portion of the rent or the full amount. And I know throughout this podcast, I'm sure we're going to go into the details, the nitty gritty of what that entails as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of misconceptions, I think, with Section 8. Guaranteed rent. I hear that a lot. And it's not guaranteed rent, but it's pretty darn close. We're going to dive into some of it. Spencer, I cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, you mentioned varying amounts of rent. I remember having a tenant in one of my houses and she started out, the rent was something strange like $724, but she was paying a very small portion of that rent and Section 8 was paying a large portion of that. Maybe she was paying $24 and they were paying $700. Over the course of 2, 3, 4 years, she was paying a vast majority of it. So that is really the way the Section 8 program is supposed to work. So it can vary from year to year, even how much they pay.
I've seen it vary. So like starting out where Section 8's paying the full subsidy, so paying that full amount. And then the next following year, depending on that tenant's income that they're making, the tenant might have to pay a portion of the rent. And that, like you said, it can definitely vary year to year there.
I think one of the things that's important to note is like there's some kind of like local Section 8 knowledge that would be Birmingham and then kind of some federal processes that every Section 8 program has to go through. So what happens is there's a housing authority that is created and they get awarded Section 8 vouchers and they essentially get paid. I'm pretty sure it's a not-for-profit type entity. These housing authorities get paid based on the number of vouchers that they can handle. So the more vouchers that they're able to handle through this government program, the more money they make. And so they have a director of this housing authority and they also administer other programs like there's a veterans program that's very similar to Section 8. And then there's another number of other programs that they administer. But Section 8's by far the most popular one and the one that everybody kind of knows in this industry. And I think the one that probably people have the most questions about. So I think the first question is, you know, a lot of people think, hey, I want to put this house on the Section 8 program, or I don't want to put this house on the Section 8 program. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a misconception in how they see it. So Holly, tell a little bit about how the residents that are Section 8 residents find the house and that it's not just, oh, we just put it on the program, then all of a sudden the Section 8 person rents it, right?
Yes. So we're going to market our property. So let's say an owner wants to market with Section 8. So we're going to include it on our general website. So through our website, Evernest.co, through Zillow, Trulia, all the major websites, but it's also going on gosection8.com. So this is going to have every property that's available for the Section 8 prospect. So saying, hey, this is available for you to apply as well. So it is advertised on that as well.
And I think one of the important things is in some markets that we're in, I think how people get their income to rent a home is actually a protected class. That is not the case currently in Alabama when we're recording this. So you don't have to accept Section 8. And so if a Section 8 resident comes, we do have some, although albeit very few, because very few, and I'll tell you why, but very few landlords that don't take it. But you don't specifically have to take it, although we certainly suggest taking it because they're not a protected class. You know, in these low to moderate income neighborhoods where these vouchers are very popular, my best guess is that about 60% of the residents are what we would call private pay, and about 40% are Section 8 residents. So when you think about it, hey, you know, I don't want to participate in this government program, you're basically eliminating 40% of your potential applicants or potential renters. And so I think it's really important that, I mean, you could almost eliminate that and then eliminate dogs, and you would have like 2% of the population that could rent your house.
Three people that are available to rent the house.
But so, you know, I think it's really important that if you're going to invest in low to moderate income houses, and you know, when I say that, I mean, I'm talking about generally $1,100 and less in the Birmingham neighborhood. So, you know, go ahead.
I was about to say, we get a lot of investors who call us, and they're wondering, they're asking, hey, should I put my house, should I allow Section 8 in my property in Birmingham? So it's a question we actually get a lot, whether they understand it completely or not. They really want to know what the pros and cons are.
And I think that's important. I mean, Holly, highlight some differences in like a private pay resident versus a Section 8 resident.
So the pros are going to be just that rent. I know getting that rent at the beginning of every single month. Section 8 is guaranteed to pay that rent every single month. Another pro that a lot of owners see is going to be a yearly inspection. This could either go pro or con depending on the property, but every single year, Section 8 is going out to make sure that property is still up to those standards. So that could also be a pro for some owners. And then also Section 8 does screen their candidates before they allow them to get that voucher. Obviously, with Evernest, we do the screening process as well. So we're doing the credit check, the background check, income verification. But Section 8 is also screening those applicants on their end as well. So those are some definite pros for the Section 8.
Yeah. Let me, before you get into the cons, hold that thought. I want to just add some color because I think it's important right here. Some people that are, you know, would consider our competitors say, you know, if you have a Section 8 voucher and you can fog a mirror, in other words, you're living, then we're going to move you into our house. And that's not how we look at it. We look at it as whether you're Section 8 or you're private pay. There's great Section 8 people. There's great private pay people. Section 8 is just a way that they receive their income. And so we really have the philosophy of we need to definitely screen that resident just as hard as we screen other people. Now, we do rely a little bit. We do some income verification, but we do rely a little bit on the Section 8, the housing authority, to help us with that income verification. But everything else, I mean, we want to make sure we're not moving somebody into people's houses that might destroy the house or be a threat to the neighborhood or the neighbors. I think just some other pros that I thought about was you mentioned the inspection on an annual basis. There's also like a pre-move-in inspection. We try to manage all of our homes to that kind of minimum Section 8 standard, just because we feel like it's probably a great minimum safety standard. But you have essentially an inspector that'll come in and make sure the house is safe for the resident, you know, another set of eyes that are going in and making sure that it's a safe home for the resident. And so, you know, that's also a benefit, I would say, to renting the home Section 8. All right, what are some cons to renting Section 8?
The leasing process is going to be a lot longer than the regular applicant, the regular private pay applicant, because there are going to be additional steps that are required. So with that, like Matthew was saying, we're screening all applicants the exact same, whether they're Section 8, whether they're private pay. But then also, after we screen that applicant and get them approved, with Section 8, we're having to submit paperwork to the Section 8 for their approval. Then they're having to schedule that inspection. If that inspection does not pass, we're having to complete repairs. So there is a longer period with the leasing process, which can cause just some frustrations with owners, just how long it takes to get that tenant moved in.
Do you have an average of how long it might typically take in Birmingham if you have a couple of repairs?
I would say anywhere 3 to 4 weeks. We have seen it go a lot longer, honestly. One thing that we do in Birmingham, after 3 weeks after submitting that RAFTA paperwork, which is the Section 8 paperwork, we're going to reach out to the owners and say, hey, do you want us to remarket the property for private pay? Just because we know how long the process takes, we don't want the owners to continue to lose out on money just due to the length of the process.
So we can begin pre-marketing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that process, because I think it's really important if you're going to rent the Section 8, how the process works. So
yeah,
we stick a house out on the market. We go, you know, put it on Go Section 8. We're showing it to private pay and Section 8 residents, right? And so we're getting applications. We're underwriting those applications equally, and we get an approved Section 8 applicant. So we send out an email to that applicant and say they're approved. The thing that we want is a signed lease, typically, and a deposit for move-in. So take it from there, and I'll provide some color on what the process is once the applicant's approved.
Yes. So once a Section 8 applicant is approved, we require that deposit paid in full, as well as the RAFTA paperwork. Like I said, that's going to be the Section 8 paperwork.
Yeah. So, let me just say this. The RAFTA stands for the Request for Tenancy Approval. That's RFTA. And basically what we're doing is, in addition to filling out a lease, although we don't sign the lease, we're also filling out paperwork that this resident has received from Section 8, right?
Yes. Yes. So the tenant, as well as the landlord, is going to be filling out this paperwork. So this paperwork is going to include a lot of property information as well. So what's the requested rent amount, the number of bedrooms and bathrooms, the appliances, what the tenant is responsible for utility wise, and a lot more. So once we submit this paperwork to Section 8, they're going to review the paperwork for approval. That's probably going to be a few business days just to get that approval.
Let me provide some color on the approval. So what happens too is that they take all that paperwork back to the Section 8 office, and then the resident essentially gets underwritten from an income standpoint. So we talked earlier about what portion does the resident pay versus what portion does Section 8 pay, and then also the house. So there's all these kind of underwriting that goes on, and it really boils down to, number one, can the resident afford the house based on the amount of income they have and the amount Section 8 is willing to pay? Are you overcharging for the house? So they also underwrite the house based on the amenities, like mm-hmm. Holly was just saying, to say, hey, is this house, you know, are you asking too much for this house? So they have all these kind of formulas that the federal government's put together, and then it basically spits out a yes answer, or it spits out a no, but here's what we can pay. So there are times, which I think can be kind of frustrating, that we've submitted paperwork, we've waited a few days, we might be lucky, it might be a week or two, and then all of a sudden we get a document from Section 8 saying, hey, maybe this tenant can't afford that much, but would you be willing to take less? So pick it up from there and just talk about that kind of process.
So if we do get that, obviously we're going to be reaching out. So if we get that notice that, hey, this is the max rent that we're willing to pay on this property, we're having to go back to the property owner saying this is the only amount that they're willing to take for this. So the owner can either approve or not approve. If they do not approve, we're going to have to go to private pay for that property as well.
Yeah. And this may be a resident issue, right? So maybe another Section 8 resident could afford that amount. So it's not always your property. I mean, it may be that the resident can't afford it. So each voucher has a certain number of bedrooms based on the total number of people in that resident's family that are dependent on them. And so it may just be an affordability issue from the resident, but you're exactly right. I mean, this is one of the most frustrating times is there are times where we may say, hey, we want $1,000. And then all of a sudden they come back and they say after 2 weeks and they say, well, you know, the resident can only afford $925. Will you accept that? And so then the owner has a decision whether they want to rent to this resident. But that doesn't stop the process. You know, if they say no, then that does. But there's still other steps in the process, too, if they say yes. Now, that doesn't always happen. I would say that probably happens in 1 out of 5 cases. They're getting a little bit better because they're being a little more transparent about how much the vouchers are for. Mm-hmm. So it kind of cuts down on this go-between. It used to be almost everyone we'd send in, it felt like they were coming back with a lower rent.
So when I was renting houses myself back in, you know, the Stone Ages, and we had this situation, when I would have this situation come up, sometimes a tenant would approach me and, you know, I'd find out that they were only approved for $900 of the $1,000. And then they would come and say, well, hey, I'll pay the additional $1,000 out of my own pocket. So what's the danger? Now, we don't accept that. We don't do that at Evernest, but some landlords may be tempted to do that. What's the danger in doing that, Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, that's I think it's a federal crime. I don't know exactly what it is, but basically what we sign is some sort of lease or attestation to say this is what we're getting paid and we're not getting paid for anything more. And right. You know, we used to see this all the time. I mean, it happened so much. I think one of the things, like the government over the court, because you and I have been doing this for a long time, the government at one point was paying 100% of what they considered, I forget what the right word is, but the rent of that house. And then there was a season we went through where they only paid 90%. I think there were some funding cutbacks in Section 8. And so like on an $800 house, it's not like they cut the people that were already receiving rent, but the future people, any new tenants that moved in, they were only paying 90% of what they considered to be average rent because of funding cutbacks. So if you had a house that would all day be an $800 house to a private pay tenant, they started at $800. When we first got started. And then at one point, they would only pay up to $720. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know when this was, kind of during, I think, the Obama administration, it went from 90% up to 110%. So they're willing to pay more than market rent. Market rent. I don't know why I couldn't think of that word, but market rent. So then they're willing to pay more than market rent. I think today it's still at 110%. I think they're actually willing to pay more than what they consider to be market rent for homes. So that might be another benefit to people. All right. So let's say they underwrite the resident and everybody's a go. We're like, yeah, let's all do this, whether we agreed to less or they accepted the original amount we sent in. What's the next step after that, Holly?
Yes. So the next step is going to be an inspection. So each Section 8 is going to have an inspector. They have a checklist that the inspector reviews for every single property. So this inspection is going to be checking for the safety and sanitary conditions of the property. So just some examples of what they're checking for. For example, heating and cooling. Is this working properly? The plumbing. Is there hot water? Are there any leaks in the property? Like the electrical, are the outlets all working? Are the light fixtures working? The security of the property is a very big deal. So do all the windows open and close properly? Do the doors latch properly? Those are just a few of the items. They have a whole list of items that they are going through. Let's say your property fails inspection. Let's say one of the windows is not open and closing properly. It fails inspection. The owner is required to complete this. And then a reinspection will incur. If that work is not completed by that reinspection, then the property is going to fail Section 8 completely. So it's really important to get the repairs done, if any, in that case.
And if you really want to slow down the process, have an inspector go out there without your utilities on or not prepared for that inspection. That will delay it big time.
and make for a mad inspector, which is never good.
Exactly.
Nope. Yeah. So, let's say, so there's like an inspection, potentially a re-inspection, if there's something that needs to be done. Once that's done, then we basically have to wait for the caseworker to tell us to sign a lease, right?
Yep. So once we get approval that the property has passed inspection, we reach out to the caseworker to get that move-in date. And then that's when we're sending that full lease for that tenant to sign. A lot of the times they'll give you the same day move-in, just depending on the situation. I know we've ran across that recently in Birmingham. The Section 8 inspection will pass, and then they'll give us that move-in date for the following day or whatnot. So we send that lease out as soon as we get that date from the caseworker.
So I'm going to go back through the process real quick. I know we kind of jumped around. We didn't really jump around in the process, but we provide a lot of color. So first thing is, listen, we're making sure we're opening it up to everybody. We want everybody to apply every now and then, maybe 40% of the time. So I guess that doesn't qualify as every now and then. A Section 8 resident applies and they get approved. And then we submit to the Section 8 or the housing authority what's called a request for tenancy approval. You'll hear us call that a RAFTA. Once that's submitted, then there's an underwriting essentially of the resident based on their income, and they have to come provide proof of income to the housing authority. And there's also a kind of underwriting of the house, market rent of the house. Once all that is taken care of, that was the point where you might get them coming back and saying, hey, we can't pay you X, but we can pay you, you know, X less $25 or whatever. Doesn't generally happen, but it can happen. Need to be prepared for that. Once we get all that done, then we have an inspection. The inspector goes out there. If he or she finds anything, then they send us a list. We go fix it. And then there's a re-inspection just to make sure that that is complete. And then once that's done, we get an approval and a move-in date to sign a lease, and we sign what's called a HAP contract. And I forget what HAP stands for.
Housing Authority something.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
HAP. HAP is what it is. And it's basically what we sign is we sign our lease with their addendum. And their addendum says, hey, anywhere the lease and the addendum are different, then it supersedes the addendum, obviously supersedes our lease. So we do kind of buy into the way they do business. Now, listen, some things people have heard that I think are myths or could be myths is that, hey, a resident tears up the house, can they get kicked out of the Section 8 program? How would you answer that, Holly?
I know based on my experience with this, so whenever I have annual inspections, let's say the inspector goes out, we see that a tenant has severely damaged the property. We get the list of repairs. The owner then has the choice to either make these repairs or that property is going to get disqualified from Section 8. Section 8, just based on my experience, they're not responsible for these tenant damages. That's going to be on the owner. I know with Evernest, if there are any tenant-related damages, we will charge that to the tenant, but ultimately that owner is going to be responsible up front for those repairs.
So I think this is a really important thing. Why we screen residents really hard before we put them into houses, and not to say that it's a perfect science by any stretch. I mean, grading someone's housekeeping skills are really hard to do. But if a tenant destroys the house, I mean, you got to think the reason they're on Section 8 is because they, you know, can't afford a house that, you know, that big or that much money. And so when they destroy the house, they are also not going to be able to afford the repairs. So, you know, I think that is a little bit of a risk that we run. Now, what a lot of owners I've heard say is, yeah, but they'll get kicked off the Section 8 program. And in theory, that is how it's supposed to work. I've just never seen that work in reality. You know, I heard a housing authority person tell me one time, you know, our goal is not to have people kicked off the program because where are they going to live? But right, wrong, or indifferent, it is a potential risk renting Section 8. Now, look, 98% of the residents are awesome. And so, you know, but I want people to be definitely aware of what can go wrong. And, you know, we get to see it because we see it at scale, and we get to see the one or two bad residents that make it tough on everybody, but I think it's just important that people know that there is a possibility that something bad happens. Now, this is the same thing though with private pay. I mean, it's possible that a private pay resident tears up the house and can't afford to pay you back to fix it. So, you know, part of that's just the risk of landlording.
But I also think, you know, let's say you have a one of the 98%, one of the, you know, great Section 8 residents in your home, there is going to be more wear and tear on the house. So some people might look at that as a con because they're going to live in the house more. If they don't have a job, they'll live there more. They'll flush more toilets. They'll flip the light switches more. There's just more possibility to wear the house down. So during the turn, you might have a little bit more work to do. So that's something to consider.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It makes total sense, right? Like people that are living in home, it's the same way we experience more work orders in the summer when it's really hot and when the winter when it's really cold, because people are in the house more, they're using the facilities more. So if somebody has only a part-time job, may not have a job. And listen, there's a lot of Section 8 residents that have full-time jobs. So, you know, I don't want to throw everybody into that one. But if you have a Section 8 resident that does not have a job, yes, they are probably flushing the toilet consistently more. So great point. In Birmingham, there's four housing authorities. And I tried to name them on my notes that I'm taking, but you want to try it?
Well, I definitely can get probably three of them. You got Birmingham, Section 8, which is the largest.
Yep. Yes. Probably 80% of all the vouchers come from Birmingham.
The majority, for sure. Yes.
You have Jefferson County, Section 8, which I loved to work with them back in the day. They were awesome to work with. Bessemer, Section 8. And
it starts with an F. Fairfield.
Fairfield.
Since this is only a 30-minute show, we're going to help you out
there. Well, I never have used Fairfield Section 8. So
I have not worked with them recently. So I was stumped on that one as well.
Yep. There you go. That's why I'm the salty veteran. I've been here. So let's wrap this thing up. I think the important thing to, you know, is Section 8 good? Is Section 8 bad? I don't think it's either one of them. I think it just is what it is. And I think people need to understand the positives and negatives, and it definitely has its fair share of both of them. We receive a ton of checks every month, not just in Birmingham, but across the country from housing authorities that are putting money into our account on behalf of residents for our clients. So any final thoughts, Holly, before we go on Section 8?
Yeah. So I think it's just important for the owners to know those pros and cons. So making sure to weigh those prior to going into it. So knowing that if there is work that's needed, that it's going to have to be done to get approved for Section 8, and that leasing process is going to be longer. But then at the end of the day, if you do have a Section 8 tenant, you are going to be getting that rent at the beginning of the month. So I think it's just making sure, weighing those pros and cons prior to signing up.
And my last thing I would say is, from my experience, now we might have to dig into the data to prove it or what, but my experience is, you know, once you have a Section 8 tenant, they tend to be longer term tenants, in my experience. I mean, I've had private pay tenants that have lasted a long time as well, but I've also had some Section 8 tenants that have been long term. And that's just great. The less you can turn that house, the better it's going to be for you as a landlord. All right, Matthew, any final words?
Yeah, last thing I would say is, you and I get so much fan mail from this. Like, I'm shocked at all the people that actually listen to this. You know, two bozos in Birmingham putting on a podcast. Yeah. The last thing I would say is, while we love the fan mail because it does our hearts good, would somebody please also, when you send that, leave us a 5-star review? I think it's so super helpful to get our message out. And so if you're taking the time to send us emails and thank us for the show, please also take the time to rate us on Apple or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast. I think, number one, you know, Spencer has a real low self-esteem, so he really he needs to feel good about it. But it would really help us get the show out to a lot of people when you do that. So thank you very much in advance for doing it, whoever does it.
Yep, awesome. And share it with your friends. So that is it for this episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next week with a new episode.